It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The one you came to see, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Welcome! Welcome to Kill Me Now, yeah!
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We have the much requested part two of Kevin Allison right now.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah. Kevin is gay! Kevin is gay, yeah! And Kevin is gay.
Wow.
So, all right. Last we were speaking about, and I have like more questions now. Now, you did a one-person show. Like, this is what... All right, so...
Yeah, I had been starving for 12 years after the state broke up.
Basically, right, but also the state, like we talked about a little bit about, you know, how all those cool guys mm-hmm. went on to,
make millions of dollars.
Right, and,
kill me now.
One who can't be fake... not that they're fake. Like, I love Michael Ian Black is one of the greatest guys ever.
Oh, you know, but there was a lot of tension between us when we broke up, but now it really truly is water under the bridge. I mean, we really do realize, oh my God, we are kind of like family. And just like with your family, you're like, you get back together at Christmas and you're like, oh my God, he's still an asshole,
I'm a Jew.
Right?
But and you realize, you know, once you get to a certain age that you don't have to spend Christmas or any holidays with
and
people
who
are miserable.
You also kind of realize, oh, I have certain methods of not making a big deal out of, you know, learning how to get along. And some of the members of the state have really mellowed out in beautiful ways. Like, you know, Michael Ian Black was very super helpful with me getting my career back on my feet.
He's such a great guy, that guy. Yeah. And I've asked him to do what the fuck with the mic?
Oh, my God.
So what happened was you did a one-person show.
Yeah, I did a one-person show in 2008 called F Up. It was F,
character.
F and three asterisks.
Right.
That's how that works.
Right, so you didn't write out fuck.
Exactly.
So it didn't say fuck on the poster. So you didn't say fuck.
Exactly.
Fuck is a curse word, so you didn't want to say fuck.
And you wouldn't believe what a fucking meltdown it was for my mother.
No way.
My mother was like, we got a postcard from someone else with that you have this word in your show's title. I'm like, it's even asterisks, mother. I mean, it was just,
You know, it's amazing how, you know, in this climate, if you will, these people are so judging. I'm not talking about your mother,
right.
But, you know, about what words you use. And yet they will vote for someone who talks about grabbing a woman's pussy.
Right.
They, you know, hate immigrants.
You know,
and it's like all these words, it's your actions that matter. Yeah.
There's all this holier than thou kind of attitude, and then, oh, never mind the fact that we're taking meals on wheels away from people who have nothing else, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Now, so you do, how long did you work on this one-person show, and what gave you...
Gosh, you know, at that point I was returning, because I had decided to leave performing arts. I was like, I guess I'm going to run away, I guess I'm going to quit. So I tried working in a 9-to-5 office job.
Yeah, what was that?
I was the assistant editor to books by librarians for librarians.
Wait.
It's amazing. I was fucking up left and right. I was supposed to proofread these books. So obviously, I'm missing things left and right.
Judy, wake up. Judy.
Okay, can I just say something?
Yes.
Books by librarians...
For librarians. Yeah, which might be even more irrelevant now.
What were the books... about that
they were
by
about
librarians
how
for.
To digitize stuff and put it online, you know.
So they were informational.
Yeah, they were, should we rethink the Dewey Decimal System, all that kind of stuff.
You can't rethink the Dewey Decimal.
No,
I love the Dewey Decimal.
For God's sake.
Wait, so... And you were supposed to proofread those.
Yeah, and so
did you ever fall asleep at work?
Oh my God, all the time, and I was fired. I was fired.
Like,
and
all then, right, let's do that scene, okay? What was your boss?
My boss was a guy who would say, "Hell hath no fury like a Southern queen." He was like a Tennessee Williams character.
Okay,
who
so
loved books by librarians.
Okay,
or librarians.
Kevin, can I see you in my office?
Yes, sir.
Hell hath no fury like a Southern queen. As you know, I've said that many times.
I take it you're firing me, sir.
Well, let me get to that first. I want to say, you know, you're a very nice man.
Oh, thank you.
And you're very talented. But I don't think that you're cut out to
this
read
is more like
library
Jeff Sessions than a Southern queen.
By librarians for librarians. I know. I was thinking that. I feel like I'm on the
dais
getting, yeah, you know. Well, I just want to say that, you know, I have nothing against the gays, but
well, you are as
I
the character you
gay.
Are.
I am a gay, so I'm just telling you, you're not being fired.
Oh, for
because
that.
You're a faggot.
Oh, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
You're
sir.
Being fired because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And I really, honestly, Kevin, I don't think.
Should I get back up on the stage?
I don't think you're cut out to sit in a library all day.
No.
So I want you to get your ass out back on that stage, and you can bet me and the other librarians will be in that audience.
Oh, thank
we
you so
We make
much.
The best audience members.
So much nicer than my actual
comedy.
Boss.
Oh, well, I'm Jeff Sessions.
Oh.
The Attorney General.
Oh, that sweetheart.
And you know why I like you, too? Because you're not black. And I hate the blacks.
Oh, now it's
you know,
coming
I can
together,
deal
yes.
with the gays because you're white.
Oh,
you know?
God.
All right, so you get fired.
And I
did
decide,
you cry?
Did I cry? No, I was more relieved. And at that same time, a woman asked me, "Hey, I'm starting this new school where we teach all kinds of writing. Would you like to teach a sketch comedy writing class?" So it was standing in front of a group of people and teaching that. And, you know, did I talk about this the last time? I would say stuff that was so... you know, kinky or raunchy,
right,
and
right.
everyone would laugh. And then I'd say something really heartfelt, and everyone would appreciate that. And then I'd say something absurd, and everyone—I was like, "Oh, wait, I can kind of be myself,
right.
in front of a group of people." I think that's the inkling started
right,
turning
right,
then.
Right.
So I created this show called F Up. It was five characters who had effed up their careers.
Right.
One was
that's
for
a great idea.
One was like a Jewish vaudeville comedian from the 20s whose partner had gone to Hollywood and become famous,
right.
and he had failed.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. But even it was too broad and too... I mean, it was funny, but I think people could tell that I wasn't going all the way. That I was trying mm-hmm. to do something autobiographical, but still not just being me.
Right.
And that, so Michael Black came to the show in...
So you're doing the show.
Yeah.
And how big is the theater?
I did it... Well, I did it several times at the Pit in New York City,
right.
but then I went out to do it in at the Eureka Theater in San Francisco, which seats like 250 or 300
but
people.
But they have beautiful vacuum cleaners.
Oh
there.
My God, they do.
So,
but there were like maybe
50 people.
In,
right.
Yeah.
So you go to this big theater and there's 15 people and Michael Ian Black.
And the microphones
aren't working.
You
didn't know he was
working.
Coming.
No, I didn't,
you didn't
know
he was coming.
And so he's one of 15 people in the audience. And now... At the beginning of the show, I did a little bit where I came out, not naked, just in my underwear. For some reason, I thought it would be funny to address the audience like so
were
raw.
Were your
and
red
real.
Pubes coming out?
Probably.
Right.
Oh, yeah. They always are. They're always busting out all mm-hmm. over. And then
like
I went
June.
Into the characters. And after the show, I said to Michael, "What'd you think?" And he said, "I think that beginning part where you were just you..." He's like, "I think the audience wished you'd been that way the whole time.
Right.
Just tell your own goddamn stories."
Right, right.
And I said, "Look, I'm too many things that casting agents don't get. I'm too
I know, but that's
kinky and strange.
No. But that's on you because you can't have your self-esteem in a fucking casting.
Oh, absolutely.
Director.
I grew up with a, you know, with a lot of hearing, oh, you're too gay seeming, and but at the same time, I felt like I was a lot of contradictory things, like too polite and Midwestern, and too absurdist and yet too serious sometimes. So I was like, it just feels too risky. And Mike said, that's it. If it feels risky, then you're probably opening up somehow, and an audience would open up to you.
That's what I tell my students. That all the things you don't want to talk about are the things you should be talking about.
So the very next week, I go back to New York. I'm 39. I'm about to turn 40, and I'm like, fuck it.
What year is this? 2000?
This is 2009 now.
Okay.
And I literally thought to myself, yeah, okay, if I'm going to go up on stage and be myself and tell true stories, I've really got to learn to tell that my mom in my head voice.
Right.
I can't use you anymore.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I called.
No, any therapy at this point?
Yeah, no. I was not. In fact, the therapy that I was having 4 years or so prior, that's the therapist who was like, yeah, you should get off the stage. Yeah, I think you're
more. No fucking
way.
Yeah.
So that
was. Who tells you that? What therapist tells you? That's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
You don't tell people what to do. Like.
Yeah,
who's this therapist? Was it a woman or a man?
It was a woman. It was a Jungian, but I can't. I'm not going to say her name.
Okay, I know. Was she Jewish?
I don't think so.
Okay, because a Jew wouldn't say that. Where was she located?
In the village, in the West Village.
Okay, there you go.
Anyway.
Not the Upper West Side. Go ahead.
Right. Anyway. So the very next week, I come back to New York, and I'm like, all right. Let's just bite the bullet and try telling a true story on stage. So I contacted Margot Lightman and Julia Rossi. They had a show called Strip Stories, all stories about sex.
I remember that show. That was a great show. At UCB, right?
At UCB Chelsea. And I said to Margot, I'll tell a story about the first time I prostituted myself. I think I did talk about that the last time. Yeah. And on the day of, I was so terrified that I called Margot and I said, I can't do this.
Right.
And she said, that's great news. If they call the day of and they say, I can't do this, that's going to be the story that really knocks it out of the park because it'll be risky.
Right.
So I was like, all right, there's that word risky again. I did it, and it was like night and day. I would come to those points in the story where I was like, oh, fuck, I sound so gay right now. Or, oh, God, now I sound so polite and Midwestern. And the audience just didn't fucking care. They kept opening up
more. It's all your
more.
Fucking head.
Yeah.
It's all in your fucking head.
Yeah.
It's all your voices in your head.
So I felt such a different connection.
So did you feel like you were having an out-of-body experience while you were up there? Like
A bit. I was like, oh, well, this is weird because it's more like I'm conversing with the audience, know?
But you're letting them in.
I had been so tied to memorization before. And here I was even like forgetting shit and being and just saying, wait, where was I? Would help me out. And, you know, it was just a very, very different feel to in being with an audience.
Right.
And another thing was that afterwards, people didn't just say that was funny. People said stuff like, oh, well, I've never prostituted myself before, but holy shit, the way you described your emotions triggered this memory of when I got into a fight with my dad. You know, like when you tell true stories, like it just things start resonating inside people in ways you can't even predict.
Right.
That all the last show, your part one. That was happening to me while you were speaking.
Yeah,
the entire time.
Yeah. I walked away from the UCB theater that night. I'm walking down 8th Avenue. I was like, this is it. I've got to create a show called Risk where people tell true stories they never thought they'd be sharing in public. But here's the thing. I was aware of the existence of The Moth and This American Life. And I was also aware that podcasts were becoming popular at that time. So I was like, well, that's it. Because I'll never succeed by just doing small room comedy.
Right.
I've got to reach a larger audience. And I've got, like, a podcast would fucking force me to have to come out with something every week.
Right.
Which I desperately needed at that point. I need deadlines.
Right.
Yeah. So I presented this idea to various friends. And at first it was well-known comedians doing the show. People like Mark Maron and Michaelina Black and Margaret Cho and folks like Sarah Silverman. And so that was really fun and it brought some attention to the show.
Right.
But when the show really became something was when the fans started writing in and being like, okay, I want to talk about the time I was molested, or okay, I tried to murder my mother. You know, like things that, you know, a lot of comedians or performers might even be shy about talking about because it doesn't jibe so well with their
career.
So, like,
what's the, like, give me, like, something that freaked you out, because you've heard everything.
Oh, we're working right now on a story from a young woman who discovered that her father was into cannibalism and who tricked her into eating some of this.
No stuff. Fucking way.
I'm not kidding.
Wait. Where did he get the dead bodies from?
See, that's the thing. We don't know that part. So there's a lot of times, like, on Risk, we'll just let people know, look, things are messy, and these stories are not going to wrap up with a bow quite so often.
I need to know. Her father was into cannibalism. Does she have a regular job? Like, is she seem like a normal
human? Well, that's the thing. Some of the people who share on Risk go by another name.
Right.
So she is actually a horror writer. So she already has another name.
Right.
You know, which, you know, it's an appropriate thing to grow up to be.
Yeah.
Gross.
I mean, okay. That's the healthiest thing I could think of her growing up to be.
But, you know, the
is she married or?
Oh, I don't think so.
She's
but
probably
just
gay.
Today, just the episode that went.
Why? Because she ate.
What the fuck?
Fucking shut up. All right, go ahead. BP, go.
Just today's episode that was just released today, Paul Gilmartin talks.
I love Paul Gilmartin.
Yeah. He walks through. It's excruciating. It's really uncomfortable. And he told it live. See, some of our stories are one-on-one.
Right.
And some of them are told live. He did this in Los Angeles, and it was the story of how he realized years later that he was kind of what they call covert incest.
Right. We talked about that with him.
Yeah. Very strange and intriguing.
Yeah. He said, but he was never molested.
Never. Right. He can't point to, like, having been raped, but there was a lot of inappropriate nudity, inappropriate comments, very romantic behavior, weird criticisms that you would normally only make to, like, someone you're super close to physically.
Oh, God, now I'm thinking what I say to my kids.
No! Watch it.
I think you're fine.
You're going to be the subject of a Risk story someday.
Because Ben's getting, you know, hair under his arm. So I was like, wow, you're getting hair. Is that bad?
No, I think you're
That's
in the
That's a normal parent embarrassing thing. And then, if you were to start twirling the hair under his arms, that might be a little weird.
No. And then this is another thing. You know, my kids walk around in their underwear all the time and they're fucking slobs, but I had underpants and a bra on and I had to go in the other room and Henry's like, you're really sexy. And I go, shut up. He's like making fun of my body.
Aww.
And he's like, when I'm your age, I'm going to have a really hot. I go, shut the fuck up. You walk in here in your fucking underwear and your shit all over the fucking living room.
Oh, my God.
Somehow that's more appropriate.
So that's not bad.
No,
I guess not.
Maybe
I'm not officially
talking.
A child psychologist.
All right,
because
now I'm all paranoid.
God. We have a lot of kinky stories on the show.
Okay, so wait, back to the cannibalist.
Maybe you should have Judy's sons on your show.
They're not into it, believe me. No, but did the cannibalist, like, is she close with her father? Like, how'd she find out she was eating?
Her father's passed away. Yeah, well, I don't want to reveal too much because we haven't finished the story.
He got eaten.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. What's another good one?
Melina Williams is an amazing storyteller. She's a black woman, grew up in the project.
Does it matter that she's black?
It does.
That's
a part of the story.
That's what my mother used to say. Oh. One time I asked my mother the difference between white eggs and brown eggs.
Uh-huh.
And she said, the difference between white people and black people, nothing!
That's great.
That's awesome.
All right, go ahead.
When she was a little girl, she was entranced by a slave scene on Star Trek. A scene where Khan, or maybe Kirk, mm-hmm. like makes a slave out of a woman, mm-hmm. and then she consensually loves it, right?
Right.
And Melina was just like that. Just lit up her
is
8-year
old. Is that Melina from Melina and Barnes? In sorry, go ahead. That's Selena and Barnes. Go ahead.
It's a tick.
Okay, go.
So anyway, she realized over the years, like once she got to her 20s, oh, I'm really fascinated by this whole, master slave sort of relationship, and yet. How do I deal with that? Like, she saw the ghost of Martin Luther King being like, girl, you right. will not be engaging in this. So
he was freaky.
And also the kink community. It's,
who was it, like, freaky?
Martin Luther King. He had a lot of mistresses.
Ah, yes.
Okay, well, there was, they all did. Okay? They right. all did.
Oh, I'm just Kennedy. Saying. I think he would have understood. That's all.
I was not, just learning about Mussolini. Freaky. Mussolini
he was
had quite
freaky.
A lot.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway.
He had a dream. Go.
Yes.
And she had a dream. So we're talking about
her dream.
She had
a dream too, and she had a dream to find, like, what it became was she wanted to explore the whole thing of, like, plantation slave
right.
play, right?
Right?
So she found a guy who was super fun, this British guy who was very creative
she
and fun.
She could have just worked for Donald Trump.
Oh
go ahead.
Oh, my God. Go. Oh, my God. No, that's not play. That's for real.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So she finds this
that's
guy.
That's Kellyanne Conway's yeah, right. current relationship. So she finds this guy, and they start playing, and it's very creative, and it's very ridiculous, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek and
right,
fun.
Right, right.
And then he has to move away. So she finds another guy, and they agree to a scene, only she doesn't know him quite as well. And mm-hmm. this scene is going to be, they decide, an ambush at a public kink party at an unannounced date. So the day comes where she's at this party, doesn't know she's here. Someone puts a sack over her head. She's kidnapped and strung up, and all of a sudden she's in the midst of this real, like, Django Unchained or 12 Years mm-hmm. a Slave sort of scene. And it was so real and so intense, and the guy was so truly sadistic seeming.
Right, right.
That Melina went into what they call subspace, which is where you start to, like, lose track of base reality. Mm-hmm. And so she forgot that she had a safe word and that she could tag out of this.
Right.
Also, I think that she was going through some stuff with getting off of alcohol at that mm-hmm. time. So, you know, there might have been some stuff going on with her brain right. chemistry. But basically, she just lost track that this was not reality, and it became a deeply horrifying and scarring experience for her. So it's a story about how this kind of kink play can be a Pandora's box, and that sometimes this stuff, like this dominant and submissive stuff, can be deeper and darker than you might even know.
So how'd she come out of it?
She came out of it by the person who was running the party saying, you know, we got to shut this down, and everyone's shutting it down. And, you know, in kink, there's supposed to be, especially when it's really intense, what they call aftercare, mm-hmm. where the dom cuddles the and brings them back
God,
down to
this
reality.
This is so fucking mental.
He tried to do that to her, and she was screaming, get the fuck away from with people. You know, people were putting blankets
over. And what
over
was
and
he like?
Her.
He was
like, what's going on? I thought we had an agreement, yada, yada. So it was kind of a thing in the
Do you think he was really into it?
Oh, on some level, I'm sure he was, and I'm sure it was frightening. Right. I'm sure it was weird to him, too, right. in certain ways. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm sure he's
really
scarred now, too.
In certain ways. I mean, you know, it's weird. Like, as much as I've played with kink, it's that true. When I see truly sadistic stuff pop up, I'm like, okay, I just don't like that in any
right,
form.
Right, 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 right.
You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if there's a wink and a nod and a kind of, you know, like teasing thing
it's
about
role play.
It. Right, right. But if there's something that comes out of someone where I'm like, wait, your eyes look unfocused and like there's true
right.
meanness coming out here. Like, I can't see that being said.
Yeah.
I've had people ask me to use racial slurs with them before and been like, I'm not going to be able to stay hard talking like a Republican.
No way. That yeah. is. Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mental. That is mental.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right. So you are finally yourself.
Right.
On stage.
Yeah.
And Risk is great. I mean, it's doing really well.
Yeah, it now gets over 2 million downloads each month. So it's doing well.
Yeah, so does Kill Me Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
I'm kidding.
Well, no, you
we're on this. No, we don't. We're on fucking CBS.shit, play.shit. And they won't go on any other, like, thingies.
Well, you should check.
Oh, Patrick's getting really pissed off.
Oh, sorry. No, you should check. No. You're probably doing great.
No, I'm not. Believe me.
We're not doing bad.
Yeah.
Especially for newer podcasts.
Good.
And we've been on the top of the comedy iTunes.
Now, I have a question since, you know, I've been watching the Gorsuch hearings.
Oh, God.
And, you know, today they were talking about, you know, I love older white men talking about abortion. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
And they're deciding what that a fetus is a baby. Yet they'll cover their Viagra and, you know, erectile dysfunction. That's in whatever, you know,
that's amazing.
Reform of healthcare.
Is that really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's covered.
That's fucking
as long
amazing.
As they can get hard, that's all that matters.
It's just, it's so nakedly obvious.
Right. But they're white men. So you're, you know, you grew up in a religious family.
Yeah.
I have, you know, I grew up in a pretty religious family.
Mm-hmm.
But our religions are different.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
But what trigger, like, all right, so I'll see injustice, like, in a shul, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'll see in an Orthodox shul where mm-hmm. the men sit here and the women sit mm-hmm. here. But I am used to, I know that, so I don't get, like, I mean, inside I'm like, this is fucking stupid, but I get that, all right, that, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
yeah,
let
yeah.
it go
yeah,
because
yeah.
that's
right.
What about do you catch yourself going, oh, that's okay. No, it's not.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like, in Catholicism, it's really interesting because one thing I was really lucky about is that my parents were, even though my parents were old-fashioned sex-wise, and my mom was very sex-negative, you know, even the word sex makes her uncomfortable.
Sex, yeah.
They were, like, Kennedy Democrats. They
right.
were big into MLK, big into,
right.
like, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and
right.
all that kind of stuff. MLK, Peter, Paul, and Mary, same thing.
Yeah, they both, yeah. One has a hammer, and one has a dream.
Right, right.
Yeah.
All over this land.
So I was lucky in that sense because they always were pissed off that the Catholic Church was so ridiculous
right.
about women not being priests.
Right.
I mean, that's just so. They're,
but what
it's
about
indefensible.
The not? Like, I don't get. Like, I never got. You know, rabbis can get married.
Right.
And they, you know, clergy people do a lot of family counseling and marriage counseling.
Yeah. Which, right.
How do you tell people? When you don't have a relationship, you've never, your relationship is, you know, with God or what, or, you know, a young boy who's a, what are they called? The
altar boys?
Yes, altar boys.
Choir boys.
Whatever.
Yeah, I was an altar boy and a choir boy. So,
yeah, but you never got molested.
I was unscathed.
Did
yeah.
you know any kids who got molested?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah. Yeah, but you're asking, like, what are things that, you know,
that you go, oh.
You know,
yeah.
Over time it changed. Because, you know, in Catholicism we have this thing called the Apostles' Creed that you're supposed to say where I believe in this, I believe in that. It's a long list of.
Right.
And over the years when I was in my teens, I noticed that I was able to, like, have to, like, not, you know, shut up at certain parts of the
right.
And then it was just more and more, you know,
right.
where, you know, yeah, I think that when I was a kid, there was a lot of, oh, okay, so yeah, you know, people would say, well, all of the apostles were men, which, you know, a lot of shit like that gets thrown around, and
right.
it's not even necessarily historically accurate.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that drives me crazy about religion is that people will say, well, Jesus did or said this, and we're like, we don't know what the fuck
right,
Jesus
right,
did or
right.
said, you know?
Yeah, we just have some, you know, second and third hand
exactly,
accounts.
Exactly. Coming from people in power.
I don't get the, and I heard this a lot as a kid, that I killed Jesus.
Oh, right.
You know, Jesus was a Jew. Yeah. I had nothing to do with his death. But, you know, this, like, I can't, like, the people who are pro-Israel, right?
Mm.
And yet...
Because they want the end times to come.
Right. And that, you know, the apocalypse is coming and they're going to convert all of us. Right. You know, these people who are pro-Israel and anti-Semitic.
Well,
and
it's not our choice that you're the chosen people. I think that's what it is.
No, it isn't.
I do. I think it's anti-Semitism, but they don't have a choice. They have to be pro-Israel because...
No, it's that's not...
They have to be on Israel's side because they are the chosen ones.
It's about the apocalypse is what it's about, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, there's so much like even in the... Here's a great one. I think it's in the Gospel of Matthew mm-hmm. that when everyone's shouting about whether or not Jesus should or should not be executed... Right. Matthew has the Jews in the crowd and he calls them Jews, which is funny because it's like, well, yeah, obviously most of them were because they were all friends and yada yada.
Right.
But the Jews are shouting out, let his blood be on our hands. And it's hilarious because it's like, who has ever shouted that?
Right,
it's clearly just Matthew trying to distance himself and be like to the Romans at that time.
Right.
Hey, we're a cool religion that we have nothing to do with Judaism anymore.
Yeah. And we're all yelling, all right, we'll take the blame.
Right.
You know what? It's fine. We'll go sit in the dock, you know? You know, we should do Bible stories. We should act out Bible stories.
Oh, God, yeah.
How funny would that be? Yeah.
That would be great.
You know, Julia Sweeney has a great show called Letting Go of God.
Right, yes.
Where she tried to become a Catholic again, and then she was like, oh my God, now that I look closer at this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go to a synagogue, and it's so political and community-oriented. They have a homeless shelter, you mm-hmm. know. They helped pass gay marriage in New York State, mm-hmm. you know. They just did a whole installation where they had photos of Muslims who helped the Jews
mm-hmm.
during, you know, World War II. I mean...
And where is this?
On the Upper West Side.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, that to me is what religion is.
Yeah.
You know, it's... You're a part of this community. Like when my mother died, that synagogue was, you know, they made sure that, you know, people were there to do a service at the Shiva. I mean, people were checking in. I remember my mother had a heart attack several years ago and I didn't tell anyone. And all of a sudden, one of the rabbis called and said, we heard your mother, you know, and that's the kind of,
that's what religion should be doing.
In case you need anything.
Yeah.
You know, you have a community here and we're going to. You know, even they even send out things like this family's house went on fire or something. If you could donate food or, you know, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like being a part. And then these fucking assholes who have these mega churches.
Oh, my God.
And are just making millions and millions of dollars preaching bullshit. You know,
that's the thing. It's like religion, any religion or any group that has a certain belief.
Right.
There's going to be flaws. They're human.
Right.
But everyone's got to be aware that with religion, it's a very, very slippery slope.
Right.
You have to watch out because it's kind of based on beliefs rather than on facts or whatever.
Right,
you have to watch what you're buying into.
Right. So
or preaching.
And, you know, we like to look at things from different perspectives. But my mother was so respectful. Like, she always gave mass cards to our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a mutual respect. It was like you didn't know who was a Republican and who was a Democrat in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
You know, no one. It was like, all right, you are what you are. Now you fuck.
Yeah. And
you know?
there's a real like religiosity to the two sides, too, to the two political sides, you know, where it's very much a feeling and values based thing where people like are like, well, I seem to generally feel more like I like authority.
Right.
So I'm over here.
I think really religious people have OCD and that they, you know, I think it's easier for people who are, you know, and I'm talking about every religion,
mm-hmm.
for people not to deal with their own thoughts.
Right.
So, it, you know, because then they'd have to think and make their own decisions. This way, it's all written out. In this situation, I do this. If I think this, it's wrong, you know. And to me, it's so stifling. You know,
it's amazing you say that because I've been exploring Buddhism more and more.
Yes, yes.
And I went on this retreat. I went on this 10-day silent retreat. No phones, no books. Yeah.
So did
yeah,
I.
Yeah.
Vipassana. Like
Vipassana.
Last month.
Vipassana.
It was
a 20-day? Oh my
Vipassana.
God.
Vipassana. Go ahead.
Judy needs it.
I meditate all the time.
No, this retreat would be, you would love it.
No, shut the fuck up. I'm mad at you. Go.
But the thing of it is, I got a little freaked out about it because at a certain point, the main guru that you're watching on the videos and hearing recordings of was all about
Goenka.
How you've got to make sure that your sexual thoughts are not interfering and you've got to clamp down on that. And it triggered these memories of being Catholic and really rubbed me the wrong way. And then I spoke with someone after the retreat who was like, oh yeah, if you take the 40-day retreat here, you're supposed to not have had extramarital relationships for the past 2 years or something like. And so it's like, listen.
Don't fucking judge me or that's ridiculous.
The thing of it is you were talking before, like what can you give and take?
Right.
And I think that if I'm going to do a Vipassana retreat again, I would have to say to myself, okay, just ignore the sexual shit. You know what I mean?
Also, there's some controversy over those rules, mm-hmm. and each you know little place that does their own retreat has different rules for that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it just depends on who's running it, mm-hmm. and what they kind of personally think. But Goenka himself, I've been listening to a lot of his talks recently, mm-hmm. and he's kind of went back on that, like, no, the whole thing is to not be a slave to those desires, to not cling to them, to not reach for them.
Right.
Like, lust is gonna happen, and you see it with religious
leaders.
Okay,
I can't with this. Yeah. I can't with this. I can't. I really
Wait,
can't.
Wait, what can't you with it?
I just can't with the, you know, reaching of our feelings and the feelings of the lust of the feelings.
Lust is definitely going to happen with me.
The problem is that
it's an issue with
everyone
me.
Has sexual feelings.
I thought,
you can't. It's fucking ridiculous to say you can't get married, you can't be intimate, it's fucking stupid. It's ridiculous,
those
human.
Those 10 days, because I have a joke in my act where, you know, my first memory is thinking, oh my God, I love boys' butts when I was like 3.5 years
right.
old. And the joke is, that's every other thought I've had since that afternoon
right.
as well. But on that retreat, I was like, oh fuck, yeah, I do think about guys' butts a lot.
Really?
You know, like,
I think about my girlfriend's butt a lot. I mean, she has a really good butt.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I know.
Are you a slave to her butt?
Yeah.
She's so annoying. It's like I am in a relationship and we fight, you know, a good amount, and I'm still attracted to her. Like, that's the difference. It's like I still, you know, want to be intimate. And
that's great.
Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's annoying. And she's
okay.
a therapist.
Okay.
Okay? And
she
can't
puts
fucking
out.
Be in a relationship. Whatever.
Does she do Vipassana?
Vipassana. I told her that, like yesterday, I said to her, look, you know, she gets so stressed out. She works, has a family business. So it's like her parents or aunt. I mean, you can't get away, you know?
Yeah.
And so I said, I'm not seeing you unless you go to the gym or something. And we took a Pilates class, Power Pilates.
Was it fun?
You know, it's like everyone, it's me trying to get up off the fucking floor.
Yeah.
Everyone else is all flexible
and, you know,
and I'm like, you know, because I have one fake knee. And you can never go on your knee once you have a... And I'm just... I look like a fucking, you know...
If I could change one thing, it would be that we need to do exercise. Oh, my God. Why do we have to exercise?
But I get a lot from the exercise. Like, I love exercising. Like, I've
afterwards.
Always...
Afterwards.
Right, but I love doing it. Like, I
you
love...
Do?
Yeah, I love lifting weights. I love challenging my... Yeah, and I
like walking, but that doesn't accomplish much.
But it's like, That's a part. That's a meditation. You know, yeah. The counting and the counting. 15. I got a 12. I got, and you know, my trainer. Well, if he purposely will not do a multiple of five, just to fucking piss me off, because I have to have everything in multiples of five.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Wow. So he's mentally training you also.
No. Ooh. So he'll be like five, four.
Like a little BDSM there.
Yeah. He's an asshole.
Yeah. She needs it.
So.
Like counting spankings.
Do you feel like you want to do another one-person show?
You know, it's really interesting. I'm trying to think. You probably know this whole feeling of, oh, my God, what do I do next?
Right, I've right.
And
the worst thing a performer, worst thing you can say to any performer is, so what's next?
What else are you doing?
What's going on? Right. What are you doing? It's like, fuck you. Do I ask you, like, oh, how many patients do you have next week? How's that coming along? You know?
It's that kind of, you feel like, oh, my God, I always have to be doing something new, which is detrimental sometimes to what you already have going on that's good on its own.
Right.
You know?
And there's also those people who are not thankful for what they have or grateful for what they have.
Yeah.
And realize, you know, this is good. It'll lead to, you know, that you have to have patience in
exactly,
this fucking business.
Exactly.
Even
yeah.
though the more patient you are, the older you get and the less work you get as an older person.
I think I would like to do a one-person show. I think I'd also, I mean, this is the weirdest thing, but I've never done stand-up. I've never done
really?
what I consider, like, you know, observational, moving from thing to thing, that's not really narrative or anything like
right.
that. So I think it would be interesting to maybe, I mean, even though I'm 47 years old, to maybe start trying out some more of
well,
that.
That doesn't matter that you're 47.
I know. I totally have that in my
right.
head.
Right. See,
like,
you got to get rid of that bullshit.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay.
I think that in the comedy world, you've paid your due. You are so respected. I think people would dig it.
Yeah, like here, I mean,
but getting on stage at a club, they'd be like, who the fuck is this? You know what I mean? You know?
Right. Well, but also it would mostly be, like you said, just in my own head. Like,
right.
no, just do your thing and see
right.
how it goes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you should do it.
Yeah, I think so too.
I've
thought of creating another podcast that tried to focus on more political stuff, but I'm just so afraid that I can't, like, have those conversations in a positive, uplifting, and non-cliche sort of way.
Well, they just had an article in the Times about how people who really follow politics are miserable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that you should take a break. But it's like, I can't, because I feel
you
like...
You feel like you're going to take your eye off the ball and then end up in the gas chamber.
But also... I'm a Jew! But also, I feel like, you know, I'm a gay.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a parent. My kids go to the public school. Like, I need to be an activist and know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And I can't believe these fuckers are running this fucking country. That guy, who knew that I would look at a German chancellor and trust her
right.
more than this fucking asshole? I grew
Absolutely.
Up in a house where we didn't buy anything from Germany.
Yeah. No. And the thing of it is, it's all coming at us so fast. Like,
right.
so much horrible stuff so quickly.
I mean, he's only
so
been
quickly.
In for, and he's already fucked everything up. Like, you don't fucking, he's a miserable human. Like,
ugh.
Look at the way he walks off the plane. Like, Obama used to be like smiling and waving, and this is like, fuck you. Fuck you, you fucking piece of shit.
I wish he would just like conk out or something, you know, like.
He is really mentally ill.
Yeah.
We didn't ask you. This is, I see the fucking five.
Well, sometimes people acknowledge it.
Shut up. We didn't do what pisses you off. We did, didn't we? We did meds, right?
We asked you what, if you
oh,
took
yeah,
meds.
Oh, yeah, if I took meds. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the other question is, shut up. Like, seriously.
Come on, CBS.
This is ridiculous. What pisses you off? Like, what makes you so fucking furious?
Oh, gosh. I would say that what makes me most upset is when I see people who don't know better speak spouting like this conservative nonsense. You know what I mean? When I see people who I think, oh, well, that person is a decent person that mm-hmm. I went to grade school with or whatever, and they're, you know, like a friend of mine that I went to high school with yeah. was trying to share stories with me about Hillary Clinton personally murdering people.
And oh, I'm like, God.
It's so upsetting because I feel like, wait, how can I can't break through to an old friend of mine if they're so brainwashed that they
right,
think
right, right.
Hillary's running a pedophile ring or something like that. So yeah. so I really get upset about feeling like, oh my God, there might not be hope for a lot of people. It's that they don't know what they do sort of thing.
Right,
where,
right.
Where we've got so many people who are so brainwashed by, you know, like stuff like Fox News and Limbaugh and stuff like that for years and years and years, that they've just been programmed to okay. accept whatever comes their way from
all
that
right.
side.
So, and what in your daily life
yeah.
makes you go, fuck, shit, fuck, shit, fuck?
Well, I guess when people, you know, write in about the podcast, like, you know, oh, how dare you? I'm never listening again because you dared to do this or that, you know?
Okay, so we're going to now read, okay, because I just did Colbert, right?
Oh, no.
All right, ready? Just did Colbert. And I talked about those people who,
oh my God,
who are gluten free and are like how annoying people are with their food and they can't
eat
this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, info@JudyGold. Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
These are, fuck.
So, a comedian was on Colbert and told a joke.
Yeah.
And here's what follows.
Wait.
Just mounds
of it's just mounds of this shit.
Oh. Taking it so seriously.
Oh, it's people
and it's
people
like,
responding to you?
Yeah, so
oh,
great.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, no.
I'm trying to... What is it under my website shit?
Your regular email. It's info...
Uh-huh.
People wrote to you,
oh,
right?
Oh,
your email?
Wait, I just yeah. want... Yeah, because it's on my... it's on my website. You can write to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit okay. weirder when they write directly to you an email, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
just giving you statistics of gluten and...
Oh.
You know.
No, I want to read it. Why do you have to ruin everything?
I didn't
okay,
know that there was actually statistics.
Gold. Okay. I wrote Judy Goals.
Oh,
fuck,
my
shit,
God.
Fuck.
I can...
Okay. Here we go. A message. Oh, here they are. Here's one, a message from Carol on judygold.com. Which one's this? Fuck. God damn it!
They're probably never going to listen to you again.
I know. Wait.
On account of the gluten.
They will. Those are the ones that listen the
people
most.
People were writing on the Colbert website.
They're
going
to tune back to see if you say that, hey, I got this message from Carol.
they were writing on the Colbert website
oh
about how could they have me. Where are they?
When was that?
I don't know.
God damn it. I just put fucking shit.
You're losing track of your hate mail?
Fuck, I want my hate mail. Oh, here's one. Ready?
Yeah.
Hi, Judy. Can we have music? Thanks. Hi, Judy. I just saw your last 2 minutes on late night. I understand how inconvenient a gluten-free diet can be. Some of us don't have the luxury of eating gluten. Have you ever heard of celiac disease? Well, this is an autoimmune disease that when gluten is consumed, your intestines are damaged to the point your body can't absorb nutrients that are needed to live a healthy life.
Wow.
When a celiac accidentally consumes gluten, vomiting and stomach pains can occur. Okay, that's exactly verbatim. Other issues also arise. So I get how inconvenient and funny a gluten-free diet can be. Just be aware, for some, this is a life-threatening disease. Okay, that's just one. Then I got
they're worse
one,
than trans people.
Then I got one about a grandmother talking...
The gluten folks,
yeah,
you mean?
Talking about...
That's not the word you use.
Talking about... I got one talking... grandmother talking about her grandson who has gluten-free... You know, I'm not talking about those people.
Right.
I'm not talking... You know, it's like
also
I
a
have
joke.
And I have depression jokes and
right.
I said, you know, it's like shut the fuck up,
right?
No one can fucking laugh anymore. Everything's like shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, the audience laughed.
Yeah, well,
that's true.
That is an interesting thing. There is that.
It's like you can't say anything without pissing. And it's like, get over yourself.
Well, there is. There's the reaction in the room, you know, right there at Colbert. And then there's people who are right in front of a computer and can privately just, you know, dissect.
Well, they heard Judy was going to be on, so they got ready. Yeah. Right. They're like, what's she going to say?
The gluten troops are like, wait, Judy's coming on.
Just the nerds.
It's just so annoying. So annoying. So that's been really pissing me off.
Well,
all
I think
week.
You owe Carol an apology.
Carol who?
The gluten lady.
No, that was Lynn.
Oh,
something.
God.
I don't know.
It had to be.
There's
Lynn.
A thousand of them. I'm going to read Lynn. Them on the next one. Kevin, you are a delight.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for doing a part two.
Yes.
So where can people find you?
The podcast is wherever podcasts are. It's Risk. But you can also find it at risk-show.com. And on Twitter, I'm at the Kevin Allison.
And check out Judy's Risk show.
Yeah.
Wait, no, don't. Because Shaniqua hates that one. I could do another one.
Yes, please do. We would love to have at the Bell House.
Yeah, I just did the Bell House.
Yeah, we're at a bigger space now.
I just did Ask Me Another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So fun.
April 9th, right? Did you say?
April 9th, we're there. I mean, we don't have a slot for April 9th.
Yeah, so shut up.
All right, I'll shut up.
And it's Passover anyway, so you're obviously anti-Semitic. Oh, it starts the night after. Okay, so...
But yeah, let's have you on.
Yeah, I got to figure out what...
You can tell us about cannibalism, the horror of eating gluten and how it kind of made you a cannibal.
Yeah, and also about, you know, how horrible a body I have in my underpants. And he tells me he can walk around in his underpants because he would walk around like that on the street.
Sure.
But I wouldn't walk around in my bra and underwear. I said, people wear bikinis. It's like a fucking bra and underwear. That's what it fucking is.
Oh, my God, Ben.
Whatever. No, that was Henry.
Oh, Henry.
Ben would never say anything like that. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to Kill Me Now. My name's Judy Gold.
I'm Hennessy. I'm not used to
Yeah, I didn't want that. I was deciding whether I was going to bring it.
Oh.
Patrick at at the helm over here, making sure we don't sing any songs like Why Do Birds Suddenly. Oh my God! Thank you all for listening, and so long.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.